Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. From startups to established companies, I'll be bringing you a variety of guests from Southampton's business community. And today, I'm in the studio with Ben Holloway, an expert in organisational change who helps businesses unlock their potential and reach new heights. Ben, welcome to the studio. How are you doing?
Good, yeah. Thank you for inviting me on.
You are most welcome, Ben. I'm really excited to unpack this show, which is really about organisational change. We're going to be touching on things like culture. We're going to be touching on things like marketing and ultimately what business owners can do to get their business into the Premier League. Would you agree?
I would. That's a good analogy.
Nice. Well, look, let's kick off, Ben, because I want to delve into your background and some of your credentials, which really, to be honest, make you perfectly positioned to parachute into any business, help them sort things out so they can really achieve their potential. But for you, you were an entrepreneur from a very early age. Tell us a little bit about that to kick off with.
Well, thanks for that. Yes, at secondary school, I was one of the first people to set up a school business, and we sold stationery to students. And it was partly to help fund the school farm.
Yep.
So it was very different. But we would sort of work at breaks and lunchtime selling stationary calculators, that sort of thing, to students.
Yep.
And then the returns went into the school.
Were you a little bit like Del Boy?
Really, yeah. Oh, it was hard to remember that you had a business to run as well as dinner to go and grab.
Yeah, definitely. But I love the bit you were telling me about, you know, you gave stationery to the people who needed it.
Yeah, that was important to have a purpose in business. So we would subsidise and give stationery to those that couldn't get it.
Yeah.
There was no sort of pupil premium or anything like that at the time. So that was the really nice thing to go and do.
Absolutely. And also, tell me a little bit about this sponsored Cowpat.
So one of the things that we did to raise awareness of supporting others was work with a charity called Christian Aid. And we came up with an idea with the farm cows to grid out a 10 by 10 section.
Yep.
Of one of the fields. And we sold off 1 meter square blocks of it. The aim of which was a first, second and third prize. So you could, I think it was £5 a square. And we managed to sell all the squares. And it was basically, the first prize was based on the first cow and when the ingredients had come out the other end, where they landed. If I'm honest, that's the politest way of describing it. It was very popular. Other schools did similar things. But yeah, it was really good. It was very fun.
And and there's probably people out there. I mean, that idea would be great even today, right? So anyone out there that's looking to raise some money for a charity, just go and find a farmer's field.
Yeah, exactly. And creativity doesn't have to cost money. It's just about having crazy ideas that then translate into something viral.
Well, there's a bit of a theme there because we're going to be delving into some of that a little bit later on, aren't we? Now, tell us about your early professional life, because I know you spent a bit of time in retail.
Yeah. So for those that are remember school, I did well at secondary school, but then I didn't do so well at my A-levels. So I didn't get the grades I wanted, but I was very focused on getting that degree. So I went from not knowing where I was going to then go and focus on business. That's what I wanted to do.
Sure, yeah.
So I went to do something called an HND in business and finance.
Which is that a higher national diploma?
Yeah, it is. Sorry, yeah. It's a higher national diploma.
That was a complete guess, by the way.
It was a very good guess. And I did that for 2 years in Cornwall. And then I upgraded it to a degree in business, which is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was I joined the Sainsbury's Fast Track management programme, which took me to London. So I worked for them for a while and was then poached to join Laura Ashley, who just got new Malaysian owners. And mm-hmm. That was quite cool. And then went on to join Gap. So did the trio of sort of retail.
Yeah. Then. And some, like I say, all retail, but very quite a difference in the products that they sell.
Yeah, very different, but very similar customers. Mm. This was around London and Reading at the time.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Okay. I know your MO, or the thing that you're always striving to do, is build something that lasts. That's something that we were talking about last week.
Yeah. I think it's just really important to leave a legacy. Everyone can just focus on quick wins, but I think it's really important to leave something that lasts. And when I go back to the retail experience, or even when I go back to running it at the school, I gave opportunities to people, and other people then carried it on, and it grew other types of business, particularly selling sweets, which I think you may have done as well.
I did, yeah.
So I think it's really important to just sort of give back, and that's something I've always found really important. So alongside my day job, as we talk about that, I've always done stuff for values-led organisations, so yeah, whether it be charities or individuals. Yeah. It's just so important.
It's a really important lesson, isn't it? Really, like you say, you know, leaving that legacy, leaving something that lasts. So you did a bit of a stint in some of the big retail companies in the UK, and then what happened after that?
Well, as I was developing that, I started doing something with my spare time, something to give back, and I ended up as a special in the police in Wiltshire. And that took a keen interest to then come into this lovely county of Hampshire and join the police here in Southampton. But unfortunately, I was really badly assaulted. And for those that don't know, with the police, if you've got an invisible injury, so at the time someone tried to give me quite a dangerous terminal illness during an assault, there wasn't really an understanding like there is now of mental health issues.
Sure.
So I had to leave the force, really, because I didn't want to go out on parade effectively on in the day job being potentially ill. Thankfully I wasn't, but yeah, that led quite nicely into something called Business Link, which
tell us a bit more about that.
So at the time when I was headed towards the exit door at the police, I was starting to work a lot with businesses around Wolston and Northam and Southampton, and Business Link, for those that don't know, is an organization that goes in and helps both new and large businesses to go and grow across the UK. And I started out in the startup service. So this is helping people who've got a business idea but don't know how to grow it.
Sure.
Or they're within the first 2 years of their business.
I love that.
So that was really fun. And there's great job satisfaction in helping them grow. But then as things progressed, I then joined what they called the corporate team. So I worked, my clients were Stana, Britax, Twinings, Vitacrest, people like that, B&Q to a degree. And that was really cool because then I worked across the whole southeast.
And some of the skills that you've accumulated along the way, obviously some of it has been based on education, but I'm assuming that a lot of your skills are just based on experience and having tried things in certain organizations or looked at different strategies and worked out, you know, well, that works, that doesn't, let's tweak it. How's your kind of skill base built up?
I guess I've always wanted to try, you know, if somebody says don't press that red button, I want to know why. So I'm always looking at what else is behind something. So I've always been keen to look under the bonnet. And I guess that's where I've done a lot of my learning.
Yeah. And you did a bit of a stint. So after the Business Link stuff, which, like you say, you've been poached a few times along the way, haven't you? You were kind of poached to join Laura Ashley, and then you joined the Business Link startup team. And I think you were poached to join their corporate team there. But then after your stint at Business Link, which, by the way, is that still going today, Business Link? Or
It's only online, I think. Yeah, but not in person.
Sure, no. Yeah. And then so you spent a bit of time in the creative industry.
Yeah, now that was really fun.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So I knew a guy that was setting up, or had just set up, an agency in Winchester on the Whinnall. And he was very keen to get big clients, but had been told, we can't get them, we're too small, the London agencies will win. And I always like those challenges. That's another part of my values. I like
a bit like
to
the
find...
red button analogy, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I was trying to find ways in which we could win those big clients. Mm. One of the big ways is values, as I said. So that was just not tying them into contracts or giving them all their creative, passing over any work that we'd done and not seeing them as a cash cow. That was the first bit. The second bit, though, was looking for opportunity. So I found that when international businesses, Hitachi Capital was one of them, come over to the UK, there's an organisation called the Department of International Trade, and they support them and help them find premises and learn about the regions they want to set up in. But there was no creative partner to help them.
Ah.
So I saw there was an opportunity there of putting a presentation together to talk about culture, impact, audience selection, brand, purpose of colour, all of that sort of thing, and just subtly brand it at the end. Mm-hmm. And that's where we started to gain really big traction.
Yeah.
So we were very pleased to work with Hitachi Capital, but then we went to work on with Majestic Wine, Mothercare, that won a mobile award for the website that we did. And then we worked with Mitchell Dever Tires as well. So yeah, it grew from that, really.
And did you, like, what did you, how did you feel about working within the creative industry? Was it an industry that you really sort of loved?
I loved the consultancy side of it, but it was quite challenging. It was about developing relationships, though. I think where you've got clients who are used to having rosters of agencies, what I was trying to do differently was keep them for the longer term. Mm. So in the early days, it was doing more work than you'd been asked for to try and show value, but also recognise you want to work with them long term. So rather than being separate to a lot of our clients, we were great believers in working with them, so we'd have them in our offices. That was really important. And we would also train them up. So a lot of the technology that we used, we were a .NET organisation, really. So we used that, and we used Windows machines with our clients, so we could train them up. So bring them into the office and they would be familiar with it.
Yeah. And it's weird, it's strange, isn't it? Because some of these things almost sound so obvious, but I mean, you and I both know that, you know, not all agencies are created equally, and they're not all doing this stuff. Was that really kind of like a real point of difference, almost, I suppose, a unique selling point at the time?
It didn't feel like it should be,
but it was.
But it was.
Yeah.
I really do not like people using their own business tools to hold that information from the customer.
Sure, yeah.
I very much believe that you should be empowering your customer and upskilling them at the same time.
There are so many little nuggets of information here, Ben, that you're kind of dropping along the way. And it's just really interesting because you've worked with some pretty big names that I think a lot of us will know. For instance, Hilden, Hippo as well, the Hippo bags, but also Help for Heroes.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what you were doing for those guys.
Well, I think Help for Heroes is probably the biggest step change that I've overseen of those three. Help for Heroes was, for those that don't know, was founded by Emma and Bryn Parry and it's courted in Salisbury. And when I joined them, they were going through a transitional period. So Emma and Bryn were stepping away and Mel Waters was coming in as the new CEO. And they were looking for ways to build their resonance with their audience. And unfortunately, they'd lost appeal or what they call intention to give. Mm-hmm. You know, people weren't seeing them as something that needed money. They had been synonymous with emergency appeals. So repatriation is a horrible word, but people coming back from war where they sadly weren't with us anymore. And that then fueled big donations to Help for Heroes, who were always in the shadow of Royal British Legion. And part of my role there was to look at research. And we used that research to totally transform the organisation. And it doesn't sound massive, but it is, for many reasons. Because we moved from physical injuries through our recovery centres to mental health care. And that's massive for two reasons. One, it requires different skill sets to deliver it. But also for those of the listeners that may be aware, in the military, there's a big stigma around admitting or even opening yourself up to mental health support. So that was massive.
Yeah.
And then we did a big viral campaign called In It Together, which just went viral. It was crazy. But yeah, that was a massive transformation change. And thankfully, Help for Heroes is still running today.
And you didn't stop there because you did a massive piece of work for the NHS.
I wouldn't say it was massive, but it's the NHS is a very, when you're in it, it's a massive unwieldy beast, but it's got a lot of positive attributes.
Yeah.
But it's huge. And the piece I got brought in to look at is we always think the NHS is synonymous with doctors and nurses, the people that do all the good things on the front line. Absolutely. But there are people typical to many organisations that I've worked for behind the scenes that they also need. So these are the digital architects, the business analysts, the change specialists, project managers, program managers. They were really struggling to recruit them.
Sure.
Because they weren't looking at adverts. So it was about looking at how can we promote the NHS to business specialists. And that was a massive piece of work. And again, it's all about the legacy.
Do you love getting under the bonnet of these organisations?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, because you can't not know something. I mean, you're conscious what your objective is, but it will only influence positively, I found, knowing a bit more.
Yep. Well, look, hold that thought, Ben, because, I mean, I can't believe how quickly part one has gone. But we're going to take a short break. We've got some ads. We've got a little bit of music coming up. But what we're going to be doing in part two is talking about your business right now, Holloway Consulting, talking about what you do around organizational change and culture and how you go about, well, we called it earlier, didn't we? Not turbocharging, but turbo changing a business to really help it reach its potential. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this.
Voice FM.
You name it, we'll collect it.
So a bed?
Yep.
A sofa?
Yep.
All right, what about a shed?
Yes.
So anything?
Everything non-hazardous.
Hi there, I'm Steve.
And I'm Woody.
And we're the co-founders of Ethiclear.
We collect waste and clear houses.
And we do it ethically.
Because if your waste is good enough to be used again,
we'll make sure it is.
As Ethiclear has a network of like-minded people around Southampton.
So for anything
of almost any size
that you can't shift,
book your clearance at ethiclear.co.uk.
So I got a home office in the garden, and in the spring and the autumn it's perfect, but in the middle of winter and summer it's not fun. The heater costs a fortune when it's cold outside, and in the summer opening the windows just isn't enough, which is why I got Just Coolers to install a small air conditioning unit. It keeps me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. It's the most cost-effective way of doing it. And with a 5-year guarantee and prices from £799, what's not to like? For your free quote, just visit just-coolers.com and keep your home office just right.
Voice FM.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. And I am in the studio today with the incredibly talented Ben Holloway from Holloway Consulting. And Ben is, quite honestly, an expert in delivering organisational change, or how I like to put it, turbo changing a business, helping it reach its potential. Ben, how are you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good, good, good. So we left off talking about some of your creds, or, you know, some of the experiences that have led you to doing what you're doing now. So I wondered whether or not we could delve into the wonderful world of Holloway Consulting and what it is you do and how it is you do it.
Thanks. Well, there's many different ways of attacking it, but I look at a business a bit like a building. Mm-hmm. So if you can think that you've got the roof, which for me is how the customers see it, or almost... if a bird was in the sky, that's the customer, and they're looking down on your business, they see the roof, okay? And often a lot of time is spent on finessing the roof, changing it, changing the angle of the pitch, and this is generally the marketing and the branding strategy or the website. But I like to look, as you've discovered, underneath the bonnet. Mm. So I think the things that hold up the roof are equally as important, because if you're going to scale it and you're going to grow the roof, you need to make sure that it's not going to fall down. So... the four areas that I think are really important in any business around change or the future is its people, the processes that you use, the technology that you employ, but most critically, the culture that you create. Sure. Because enabling all of those things enables you to help look at ways in which to unlock potential in a business. And remember, that's not about necessarily what it wants to do, it's what it can do.
Mm. Absolutely. And do you have the sort of same sort of step process for every business that you go into, or do you kind of tailor it depending on the industry or the objectives or where the business is trying to get to? How does it work?
So it all starts generally with a discussion around those key areas of the business, because no matter what the issue is, whatever the pain point is, whether it's, you know, like you said earlier, you know, you see in the business you've got a Premier League squad, but you're not performing in that, you're in League Two. It's about looking at what's the wider issues. So, for example, it could be that they see their website's not performing, but it may not be the website that's the problem, or partly of the problem may be the fact that you're not innovating enough. So that's a cultural thing.
Yeah. And where do you begin? So you sort of have that initial discussion with a business, and do you find you get business owners that come to you and they're just frustrated because they can see where they want the business to be, but for whatever reason, it's not getting there?
Yeah, I think it quite often it's challenges that they've got where they're just trying to go about it in the same way, and just hoping that timing is the big differentiator and that will make the difference. They're trying it again 6 months later and it's going to fly now. Mm. What I like to do, which is based on my creative background really, is look at different ways to tackle the problem. And it's not always about changing the marketing strategy or updating the website. It's largely rooted in the cultural, the ways of working of the business. So I have like an 8-step process that I go through to look at that. But effectively, it's knowing what the business wants to achieve and parking the problem, but maybe looking at some of the root causes. So rather than look at the symptoms, look at the cause.
Yeah, that's quite a powerful way of putting it, isn't it? And I like the analogy of looking from top down. Like you say, a lot of businesses might be focusing on how the roof looks, but actually it's the underlying foundations are where the cracks are forming. How do you approach those conversations, Ben? Because I presume that the people you work with need to be quite open to the very fact of stuff's probably going to have to change.
Yeah, well, that's one of the first things that you look at, really, is regardless of where it wants to be and where it is now, is understanding the mood in the business for change. And I think if you can route the pathway for change, in almost like some people see change as almost climbing the Alps, where the reality is you wouldn't do that in one go. So it's a series of base camps. So it's a series of, we'll look at this, we'll do that, we'll test and measure that, we'll do this. And that's why I think it's really important that it's a partnership with a business, not just me doing. It's got to be us together delivering.
Yeah, they've got to be invested in it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they have to be behind it, or you don't get the buy-in, or you don't get, as we've said before, the long-lasting change.
Yeah. One of the things that I found that you're very, very good at, Ben, if you don't mind me saying, is your ability to assess where there's a gap for an opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's always about looking where the opportunities lie. And I think I was fortunate to work with some very good people at Hippo, and we found a great opportunity. At the time, we were a disruptor to the marketplace, I guess, and we were taking on the skip companies. But like you said, you know, some of the opportunities are known. So at the time, there was tip charges coming in that hopefully will increasingly go. But people were conscious of fly tipping and things like that. So I said, well, look, why don't we use our expertise? And Hippo was really good at tracing everything you put in one of their bags. Traceability was great. It was a hidden gem in the business. So we used that, leveraged that, and we owned the sort of waste space, and we talk to people about where they can drop stuff off, let them report fly tipping and send leads off to local authorities. But also we created more understanding around what happens with waste and how to do stuff as well. So we empowered people at home to kind of create and do things, you know, so board out the loft, sort out your daughter's room if they were going, you know, to be studying, create a study space, you know, put a non-supporting wall in, move a radiator. These were all things that empowered people and built us in a different space.
I love the way that whatever it is you do with inside the business, it's quite far reaching. It's not just about the fundamental change. It almost seems like it has knock-on effects to the marketing function, the HR function, the finance function, the operational function. You kind of almost, you're sort of looking across the whole business as a whole, I suppose. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, going back to the analogy of creative, it's one that I've referred before, is if you find that your market is changing, it's not just as important to make those different pathways on your website. It's about the experiences that the customers will soon comment on in other areas of the business. Mm-hmm. And something I learned or took from my time in the police was from a CSI person at a crime scene. It said that every contact leaves a trace. So that's really important. So it's about how you are as a business in all different areas. And one of the things you can do as a business, and it's changing the culture to benefit the customer, is be more collaborative. Mm. So that consumer won't just buy from a marketing brochure or speak to a salesperson. They'll pick up a phone, they'll make an appointment, they'll drop in. They might go online, they might send an email. These are all channels where people's interactions are key. So when you're delivering one part, you really have to look at the whole.
Absolutely. And do you find that the businesses that you speak to, how common is it for them to just always look sort of outside rather than actually looking from within?
Well, I think the temptation is always to look at your competitors, but I think you can often find opportunities in the business, not just challenge. Mm. So it's dangerous sometimes to copy your competitors. So I know at Hippo, we were very keen to move away from doing that. But there are differentiators. So I was working at a company called Hilden, and we rebranded and we lived and breathed in the Test Valley, so it's beautiful scenery. So we used that. But as part of my discovery, I went to a place called Evian, for those that know it. It's a resort of sorts town in the Alps. And I had a look at Evian, who happened to be based there. And they looked like Fawley Oil Refinery. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. Let's use some real pictures of where we are. Mm. And let's use that across everything and grow our business.
Really clever, Ben. And sometimes it's the simplest of ideas that actually have the greatest impact. Can we delve into company culture?
Mm.
Because that's a really interesting topic. And I know you did some work with, was it the RYA?
Yeah. So for those that may have heard of it, or those that haven't, it's the Royal Yachting Association. They're in Hamble. And they do amazing work, really, to govern and lobby and support and train people to go on the water. They also have a sailing facility down in Portland, and they also run the British sailing team, or help support that. And we were working to deliver a new sort of digital ecosystem. So these are your social channels, your website, communications. But one of the things we noticed is that we actually were able to look at different people journeying through, which meant that where you might have training and participation as two separate departments, the reality is the customer went across them. So then we started talking about collaboration and building information for our audiences, and moving away from, well, we know stuff, so we're going to put it out, to thinking about those audiences when we're outputting the information.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And one of the, I've got a quote written down here, which I absolutely love, which is, and we were talking about this earlier in the week, you can't slap a fresh coat of paint on something without fixing the underlying problems first. Now, that's quite a powerful statement, isn't it? And I suppose in the business world, it sort of, I suppose, dovetails quite nicely with what you were saying about, you know, don't just worry about fixing the roof. Make sure that, you know, the foundations are solid as well. How do you, I suppose, when you go into a business and you sort of find potential problems, how do you get that kind of buy-in? Because obviously somebody might be looking and go, well, Ben, you know, that's just your opinion. So how do you get the key decision makers inside the business to really kind of buy into it or take note, I suppose?
There's many different ways you can look at. I mean, many people will talk about theory, but I prefer to talk about practical examples. So you can use your experience with brands and other companies to talk about those changes and the way that you've done it in the past. You can have a look at competitors, which is another way to do it. Or you can really get to the grips of the nub of the problem and actually look at some of the barriers to change.
Yeah, sure.
So when you're introducing new technology or ways of working, if you're just bringing the technology on its own, people won't necessarily buy into that. So if you're able to identify some pain points in the organisation, then you can use that as part of the transformation journey and address those problems.
You're a bit like a detective in a way, aren't you? But you don't just find the problem. You also help implement, I suppose, the solution for it.
Yeah, and hopefully with the business, because they've got to come on the journey with you. But I don't like to leave something left behind. I think it's important. But I think whenever you're getting a problem, you need to understand the context, which is why it's really important to understand what's under the bonnet.
Absolutely. What are some of the typical signs, Ben? When do businesses generally draft you in? You know, what are some of the telltale signs?
I think where they've lost their way, or they are finding that markets are harder to get into, or they need to move maybe from traditional to online.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the areas we haven't talked about is skills.
Yeah.
So sort of upskilling, you know, that whole sort of skills audit piece of kind of where you are, where you need to be. But I think one of the things I've done quite a few times now is actually have a look at what we call holistic skills. So working with Vitacrest, for example, we used a proper view of an individual to look at true skills. And we had a problem at the time, this was several years ago, to try and find a team leader for a particular role that they needed. And it wasn't obvious from job descriptions and CVs that they had this particular skill in their business. But we asked people to talk about team leading as a skill. But we said, look across your whole life, home, and work. And we found somebody and they filled the role to a T when we interviewed them. And the reason that that holistic thing worked, because it picked up somebody that had been a scout leader for 10 years. So had perfect examples, case studies and experience to fulfill the role. But I think switching it just to that more holistic role or review was much better.
Absolutely. What a clever way of sort of unearthing potential within a business. Don't just take for read what's on the CV.
Yeah, and never just look at what someone's doing now. Think about what they can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Hire for potential.
Yeah, exactly.
What about, just quickly, because we need to take another short break, but what about changing of the guard? You know, succession planning, for instance, or, you know, somebody's retiring and perhaps someone's looking to take on the business. Do you get involved with any of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, with many of these things, you have to have a talent plan as well as you've got a business plan. I always endorse having a talent plan. So partly it's upskilling people. For that, you need to know the skills that they have and then the skills that you need to have. But I think it's always important to have, you don't never want single person risk in a business.
Yep.
Certain size of business, you're going to have that. But always think, what if? So it's really important to plan in where are the key points of failure in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to be necessarily reliant on a single person. Look, Ben, hold that thought. Let's delve into a little bit more about that in part three, where we're also going to be exploring some of the challenges that you've faced along the way, because obviously Holloway Consulting is a fairly new business. And I'd really like to celebrate that and see what you've been up to and some of the challenges you faced along the way setting that up. So don't go away. We'll be back right after this break.
Live and local. Voice FM.
Let's hear more from Ian at Station Motors.
I think it's important to have a family business. My customers relate to it. I've been doing cars for people and now I'm doing their son's cars. My daughter works in reception and my son's nearly a fully qualified accountant. He does my bookwork, both very good drivers. I used to walk to school past his garage. It was a petrol station back then. So I ended up buying the garage off that family, you know. So I like to think I've brought my family into that family business.
Station Motors Woolston by the Itchen Bridge.
This is the sound of exercise when it's made fun. It's called Visosport, and it started in Southampton. You meet up, you play fun games, you exercise, you laugh, you keep fit. It's for people of all abilities. Visit visosport.net or search for Visosport in Meetup and have fun getting fit.
Southampton's Voice.
So I'm in the studio with the incredibly talented Ben Holloway from Holloway Consultant, who is quite honestly an expert in delivering organisational change, or I like to put it, helping businesses reach their potential. Ben, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Good, good, good. So look, we left off with talking about some of the experiences and some of the challenges that you often get drafted in to help with. And I just wondered whether or not we could talk about some of the leadership types or types of leadership that you tend to encounter when you're speaking to these businesses that want to, in effect, turbocharge what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, most of us aspire to work in sort of democratic or empowering cultures. But generally, there are sometimes autocratic control cultures. Mm. And they tend to sort of put a shadow on innovation and empowering staff. So quite often, some of the blockers to growth and change in a business can be the leadership style at the top.
Sure.
And that's where the challenge lies. And that's where some of the coaching that you see happens, focuses on, is making more of a modern manager in a business. So I think focusing on empowering culture is very much what I try to do. I try and encourage people to just give people more license to be creative and innovative in their work. And that collaboration then drives innovation in a business. And it also makes for creativity as well.
And before, you alluded to, you've got this 8-step process that you take the kind of business through. How effective is that?
Well, I've been using it for 15 years, so I hope it's good. It has delivered a lot of change, but it's also helped me give structure when I'm talking people through changing their business, or a different way of running the business, or a different way of being creative with the customers.
Absolutely. I mean, no doubt you've got the creds to be able to get yourself into a business, look under the bonnet, find the opportunities, find the challenges and put things in place that really help a business succeed in what they want to do. You've now gone from being kind of employed in various different roles and you've decided to take the leap and, of course, set up your own business, which is Holloway Consulting. And what I'd love to do, Ben, if it's okay with you, is to delve into some of the challenges that you faced along the way, because as part of the show, The Business, I like the guests to share some of the benefit of their experience, more really for anyone out there that's thinking about making that leap. anybody out there that's thinking about starting a business, then the benefit of your experience would be absolutely fantastic. So I suppose my question is, since obviously starting up your own business, which, to be honest, when did you start it up? Fairly recently.
Yeah, so I started trading on my own in December, really.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? Well, look, you know, well done for making the leap, first and foremost. You've obviously got the experience to back it up. But what are some of the challenges that you faced so far? And I appreciate it's still very early days, but what are some of the challenges that have stuck out so far?
Oh, there's many, really. I think it was about having the right legal structure. That's where I'll start.
Sure.
It's not just about your attractiveness to companies, it's also about protecting yourself. Mm. I decided to set up a limited company, which meant making decisions around who held the equity in the business, registering with an accountant, setting up a bank account. These are all big areas to focus on. I decided to go for a registered office. So my Google business listing goes to my home, but my registered mail goes to my accountant. Because I think it was really important to kind of be grown up with it, because you're dealing with established businesses and you need to behave with the big boys, really. And the big thing for me was also about insurance. So sometimes when you're going for big contracts, you need certain types of insurance, but also it protects your client as well. And I went to a well-known insurer to look at different types of insurance, but it was really confusing to me because it was adding stuff to the basket all the time. So the initial quote ended up trebling and I was like, ouch. So that's where I used an expert, and I went to an insurance consultant or broker and actually worked out, what actually do I need for my type of business? So I looked at professional indemnity, public liability, cyber insurance, etc. So that's, you know, a good example of taking a good decision. The other thing is, I knew that I wouldn't be gaining many clients in the run-up to Christmas. So I looked for available grants as well. And one of the membership bodies I'm linked to is the Chartered Institute of Marketing. And I was successful in getting a grant from them to sort of grow my business. So
oh, amazing,
that's been
yeah.
really useful.
And what was that process like going through the Chartered Institute?
It was really quite exposing in many ways, because you are applying to them as a person, although you own a business. So it does really expose all areas of you from a financial perspective. And you had quite in-depth interviews with them about eligibility. What would you use the money for, with various catch-ups as you work through spending that money? So, yeah, it was quite intense.
A very useful lifeline, though. Like yeah. I say, there are grants out there. It can be really easy with the, you know... It's so easy, isn't it, to search for things online. You think, well, I can just sort of fumble through. But what I'm taking away from that, Ben, is it's okay to ask for help. And it sounds like you've got a really good network of people around you. Do you do much networking?
I do. And it's a big area, really. I think the most important thing for me is what I've been doing in December is finding people that have the same value set as me, don't see clients as cash cows, want to work with them for the long term. But also can help grow businesses, areas that are complementary around mine. I mean, I've always believed, as with the creative agency, you don't have to be a big four ad agency to win businesses with big brands. So I'm always looking to grow my network at the moment of professional businesses that can support and enable, you know, my clients to grow.
Absolutely. And are you looking for partners?
Absolutely. All the time. But they have to have the right value set, really. That's important. I will never pay for a referral or expect any of my partners to take or send me payment. It's got to be for the benefit of the business.
Yeah, that's nice. Can we touch on the importance of dealing with resilience? Because starting a business is hard. Arguably, it's one of the most rewarding things you can do. But you do have to be resilient. Would you agree?
You do, yeah. It's almost like somebody doesn't want to go on rides, you know, going on a roller coaster. You know, you go up, down, left, right, and sometimes backwards. Absolutely. It's the biggest thing. And sometimes I liken it to almost being like a lighthouse in the ocean, being hit by waves again and again and again and staying there for year after year. It's probably the most important facet, I think, of a business person.
And how have you found that transition, going from employed, doing various roles for some quite large organisations, to all of a sudden currently a one-man island, and you're kind of there, you're self-employed, you've got all the risk on your shoulders. How have you found that transition?
It's exciting and scary in equal balance, I think. I mean, I think the most important thing I've learned, which I tell my clients, is the power of no. I think it's knowing what you are good at and what you will do, and understanding or declining or passing on things you don't do. So in the early stages, I've had quite a few referrals from businesses that perhaps don't value, you know, the long-term relationship. So I've passed them on, I've helped them where I can. But I think saying no is important as saying yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about, finding the right kind of work that kind of matches your MO of building something that lasts? And you're looking for long-term sort of strategic partnerships, I presume.
Yeah, I think so. I think because I'm not actually looking for the cash cow and just literally surfacing a light dive across the business and say, I'll fix these four things, I'm off. I want that business to succeed. Mm. So I want to look at things that actually are at the root of the problems. So if I can actually expose, by looking under the bonnet, at those four areas of people, process, culture and tech, some areas that can be better reinforced for the new roof next year, then I'll do that.
How much time, and this is a bit of a how long is a piece of string question, but you know, how much time does it take to really get under the bonnet of a business and for you to really add value? It feels to me like it's more than just you popping into the office for an afternoon.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do an initial audit of a business when I meet them, which can be a couple of hours. But I think that's where your expertise comes in, and that's where knowing to look under the bonnet and knowing some of the common causes of problems. And I think the most important thing is going in agnostic, so not necessarily knowing what the solution might be based on the problem you find, because there can be several root causes.
Yeah, sure. What are some of the barriers, really? You know, what are some of the reasons why a business owner wouldn't necessarily know or reach out to someone like yourself?
Well, I think it's sort of the stigma of reaching out. And I think it's also, you know, what am I dealing with here? Mm. You know, and quite often when you want to fix a problem, if you want to do it properly, you want to do it well once. So I think it's about building their confidence around what the problems are, but also those series of base camps in fixing it. Don't just see, you know, it's an iceberg with 80% under the waterline.
Yeah.
Focus on the whole thing, but then make it a collaborative thing, but make it a series of process improvements.
Yeah.
And manage expectations. It's not going to change overnight, but if you've got that same vision, we've got this together.
Is cash flow and finance often a barrier for people that, you know, want to grow their business, but they've just been growing so organically that they almost can't get the cash in quick enough to be able to reinvest it into different areas of the business where, you know, might fuel that growth?
Yeah, I mean, good cash flow management is about having a blend of services that deliver value in different ways at different times.
Sure.
So generally, you may have a cash cow part of your business which brings in the bread and butter, but it doesn't mean you can't invest and innovate into things that deliver high elements of value, maybe seasonally, in your business.
Yeah, sure.
And it's about having the right mix.
Are there any other challenges that sort of spring to mind in, I know it's early doors, but anything else that you've maybe cropped up against that you thought, oh, if that situation cropped up again, I would probably approach it slightly differently?
Oh, well, there's several, really. I came across some problems when registering the business. For those that have set up a business through Companies House, it could be a lot easier. But companies that are marked dissolved don't necessarily mean you can have them. That's one thing I learned.
Yeah, sure. And of course, that has a knock-on effect with what domain name you can potentially
absolutely, yeah.
Register, so or should register.
I may have mentioned a domain name that then I couldn't have the company name to. So
back to the drawing board.
Absolutely. But yeah, within 8 minutes, we'd come up with another one. So that was fine.
Excellent. Look, and I'm really interested. If someone was sat opposite right now and they were saying, oh, I'd really fancy starting my own business, what words of advice would you give them?
I would say pace yourself. So that would probably be the first thing I would say. I was aware launching in December that I wasn't going to get many clients, but I was thinking, right, okay, well, I need to have my locker better managed. So I need to have more people around me that can support diverse needs. When I look under the bonnet, there can be hundreds of different things and specialists that I'll need to call on. So it's about thinking on that roadmap. Where are you going and what you're going to be doing?
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. And of course, we touched on the importance of building a network. Obviously, networking can be a bit daunting, but would you say that's an absolute necessity when it comes to being in business?
I think it's really important, but it's not so much... I think the mindset is key again. You know, when you go to networking, you should never really expect business back straight away.
Mm, I agree.
And I think where I'm a new business, a lot of the networking I've done recently, it's been offering to help people with their clients rather than asking them for some for me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Ben, I'm curious, what's on the horizon then? What does 2024 look like for Holloway Consulting?
Well, it will be our first trading year, so lots to think about. I think for me, it's about partnerships to start with. Mm-hmm. So it's looking, I've been doing some user experience stuff recently with NatWest. That's been really interesting. And HMRC, ironically, which was quite intimidating.
Yeah, that's right. That's good.
But I think it's about getting that that client bit done so that you've got your first couple of clients in your own name and building that credibility. Because all the stuff I've done, I can talk about, but I've done it for companies. This is me doing it under my own name.
Of course. And if there's any business owners out there, CEOs, business leaders, whatever it might be, and they've got an inkling that something's not quite right, or they're not, or they've got a frustration, or perhaps they know that there's things in the business that need change, but they're not necessarily sure how to execute it. How do they get in contact? What should they do, Ben, if they want to get in contact with yourself?
It's very simple. I mean, just go to holloway-consulting.co.uk, and the first thing we'll do is we'll just come and give you a free assessment. Again, it's just looking at those four pillars and seeing how we can help, really, and then just laying out the opportunity that we see.
Brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. And that initial assessment, do you go in free of charge, or how does it
very
work?
Much so, because I need to learn the business in order to help them.
Well, so there's absolutely no risk then, really, for picking up the phone, because I think that's the challenge, isn't it? It's just getting started, making that first step.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, and also being open, and I would warn them now, being open that the problem that they see may not have the cause that they think.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, that's a really good place to hold it there, because we're out of time, Ben. I can't believe it. It's gone so quickly. But look, I just wanted to wish you and the business all the luck in the world. I know that there's going to be some exciting things happening for you this year. So we wish you all the best of luck from me and the team here at Voice FM. And if you like that show, we'll be back again next week. Ben, did you want to do a quick shout out to anyone?
The FSB. maybe the FSB, who have helped me set up. When you're setting up in business, getting your terms of business done, they help you with that.
Fantastic. Well, look, you've been listening to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. I'll be back again next week. Bye for now.
Voice FM.
Voice FM.
Don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes. And don't put in your recycling bin dirty tins and dirty plastic bottles.
If any of your recycling is dirty, greasy, or wet, your whole bin could be rejected. So follow this golden rule. Keep your recycling clean, dry, and loose. And remember,
don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes.
This message is supported by Voice FM. And if you want to know more about recycling in Southampton, visit voicefmradio.co.uk/recycling.